the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got sound designer extraordinaire, Scott Gershon.
Hello.
Hello.
Next to him, we've got the fantastic drummer of Forrest Robinson.
What it is, Mike.
And next to Forrest, we've got the tech guru, composer. What else do you do?
I say, hello, Mike. That's what I do.
Mr. Software, Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike. Again.
And joining us today, we have a couple guests. We have Johnny O'Neill. Johnny's a listener and a friend of mine, and he also just got back from a small tour with his band called Logix, right?
Indeed.
And so he's going to sit in with us. And our guest today is Mike Reagan, who's a composer, and he's composed for television and done a ton of video games, including one of my favorite, Gods of War. So, welcome, Mike. So I'll tell you what, guys. This is the show number 71. Wow. Number 71.
I'm feeling very old right now.
I remember back in show 3.
Wow, you can remember that. Wow, that's it.
Well, the thing is show number 70 was like an hour and a half. So we're going to wrap up the show right now. And we will not go that long. I just want to warn people. This is not going to be that long. So let's get into it. First of all, before we even talk about anything else, the big news today is, Les Paul passed away. And Les Paul was he didn't actually invent the electric guitar, but he definitely took it to another level. And actually, one of his best things that he's done, what he's really known for, is inventing basically multi-track recording. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And none of us would be sitting here doing what we do if it wasn't for the multi-track recording.
Amen. And if you believe everything you hear on TV, he completely invented the electric guitar.
I know. Well, that's the amazing thing. That's what everybody thinks he invented the electric guitar.
Yeah.
And there was, in the 20s they had basically people that had electrified their guitar in mm-hmm. one way or another. But he definitely took it to another level.
Definitely.
You know?
The Les Paul.
Wait, you're telling me he didn't invent the electric guitar?
Any other dreams you want to shatter tonight?
It's actually the electric ukulele. But,
Well, yeah. I mean, his recordings, though. I mean, I think the electric guitar, that's cool. But the multi-track recording was just a fantastic concept
really,
at that time.
Really, 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 really.
I mean, we take it for granted that we can layer things upon things upon things. But, back in the days, if you ever listened to, old jazz records where they're recording straight to the master, mm-hmm. it's like, you got one take. You either get it right or
mono. People actually playing live? I mean, together?
People playing live.
At the same time, in the same place?
There was no fixing it in the mix.
No auto-tune?
Room mic. One room mic.
Yeah, one omni mic.
But, that was kind of a bummer. But anybody have any interesting stories about Les Paul?
None that we're allowed to tell.
I love the guitars.
I did get to hear him speak at a bunch of different things over the years, and AES shows and things like that. And he was always a really entertaining guy. Yeah. I mean, you always kind of got the idea. I never got to hear him when he was young because I wasn't when he was young. But anytime I ever got to hear him speak, I mean, he came off as kind of like just kooky and funny, and you always kind of half wondered whether he totally was even 100% there because he was kind of so wacky. And I remember the last, 7 or 8 times I heard him speak, he always started with the same joke, which was, ladies and gentlemen, it's great to be here tonight. At my age, it's great to be anywhere. And every single time he let off with the same joke. So that was definitely one of his favorite lines. But he was always a really entertaining speaker, and I think it's great that he actually – he understood what a difference he had made, and he definitely got all the accolades anybody could ever expect. He was definitely a creative, innovative guy, and people really did appreciate it, and he knew how much it was appreciated.
Yeah, and he was actually quite a bit – pop artist of the time.
Yeah, I mean, 50 gold records.
Yeah,
he was
really, really big. And then
he was still playing club dates up until I think they said the last week in May. was the last one he played. But
really?
Yeah. He was still
in New York, right? Wasn't
in New York? Yeah.
Friend of mine went on tour there last fall, and he was playing. I thought he had like a house gig. Like, wasn't he playing Wednesday nights?
I think Tuesdays is what I heard. And he'd bring up other acts, and he'd introduce kids who were great players, and then, you know, huge stars would come through there, too.
Yeah.
He'd just make appearances and stuff, too, like that. Because you did that the Before the Music Died documentary, right? One of you guys did.
I did.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah. I have to think back. It's like, yeah, that sounds really familiar. Oh, wait, yeah. I worked on that for 4 months.
He was in that. He was in that in the beginning.
Yeah, he was. He was. That's right.
And there's the Tech Awards he was always part of, which was always pretty colorful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you get to, see Before the Music Died?
It's brilliant.
That's an excellent documentary.
It's
if anybody
so
wants to check out the story of what has been going on and what is going on in the music business.
It's so relevant to every young musician.
It is an excellent, excellent documentary that I forgot I did.
That like blew my mind. I'm like, didn't you do that? One of you guys turned
it on. It's really good. I mean, I didn't make the film. We did the mix and some of the sound work, but it really is amazing. And the funny part is,
we shot the movie.
Yeah,
we
did it
a few years ago.
Well,
the amazing thing about it, I mean, it has great interviews with Erykah Badu and all these different people,
funny,
but you know what? This thing was done years ago and it's still completely relevant. Everything that she said was coming in the music business completely happened. The careers that it follows in this documentary, it's such an amazing snapshot of what the music industry has become. They were way ahead of their time when they made it.
Wow.
I mean, it's not
Dave
that
Matthews,
old. It's 3 or 4 years.
Wow. Well,
yeah, it's really
I mean, I watched it a month ago and it was super relevant. You know.
Cool.
Yeah, but in today's circumstances of instant gratification, 3 years ago was like
it is
grandpa's
right.
time.
It is like any time of the year,
by the music industry standards,
right.
it was. Mm-hmm. This was
it's
ahead
true.
Of its time.
Well, we'll have to check it out. The title is one more time.
Before the music dies.
Yeah.
Died. Before the music died.
Okay.
Well, so Les Paul, man, he was truly a legend, and you know it actually. I think people should really just be aware of these great men that, you know, are still around and that we're losing left and right because there's a lot of innovators that are still with us. And I wish people would, you know, interview them and talk to them and get their story because, you know, we lost Bob Moog, you know, although he was documented really well. But, you know, thank goodness we still have, like, Dave Smith with us and some of the other pioneers
Rupert
that are out there.
Neve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I look for stuff from him, and I have trouble finding it. He's like a recluse.
He's kind of a recluse. I mean, Les Paul was definitely not a recluse. It's easy to find good stuff about him.
But even not even guys that invented the stuff, but also like mixers, you know, from like the 50s or that worked for like Desilu Studios and that did sound back then. I mean, the
guys
sound
had
jobs
ears back, in the day.
Back then when they were cutting mag and they, you know, just trying to do some of those blockbusters that –
It used to be that everybody spent a lot of time and effort creating that sound, and that sound now comes with, you know, it's $249 over at your favorite music store.
You
plug it in and go, boom, man, I got a great drum sound, and boom, I got a great guitar sound, done. Mm-hmm. And it took people, like, I remember when I was at Cherokee, we would spend, you know, 3-4 days trying out amps.
Right.
Okay, we got Lukather's Red Head there, and we got Joe Schmo's... let's try a combination of these mics, play it. And that's what we did for days and days and days,
just
trying to get the sound.
Yeah. I mean, we take for granted so many things, especially like in the sound effects. I mean, you go to any sound effects house and they have the Hanna-Barbera disc. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a de facto standard. And, you know, like the bongos for the running and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like
off
brilliant.
Off the chart's amazing.
Yeah, that was like brilliant. Performance for one thing, but also just to have that kind of concept of, oh, what goes there? And nowadays you do cartoons. Oh, that's the bongo sound. Oh, we need the horn.
At one point I was approached about actually recreating the Hanna-Barbera library.
Wow.
And redoing it. And for a short time when we thought that it was going to happen, I actually started listening to the library with a whole new different set of ears. Like before you're like, you know, hearing all things.
Exactly.
Now what is that?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're thinking like, wow. Okay, that's that. Or it's an oversaturated something with an RE10, you know, Electro Voice mic that just sucked. But it just had this sound on it, and it was just amazing, you know.
Like the bongo run. It's like
the
that
bongo run is incredible.
Yeah, that's like that's yeah, the guy
that
who played
no
that
slouch.
Is so like
no.
you know,
no
just
slouch.
Perfect on that, you know.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're talking about this. I'm about to do a backflip. I can't believe it.
Well,
I can't believe it. Okay.
And the funny part is those guys are like yeah, I'm not doing the big orchestra gig. I'm doing some cartoon stuff over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just whatever. And next thing you know, it's a classic now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or like the BB in that you blow up the balloon, you put the BB in it, and you go round and round. Like, you know, it's like the car
See,
that won't start kind of thing.
Vibe.
Like who? Like the guys who thought of that stuff.
I didn't know that's how you made that set.
I didn't either.
That's
well, I learned that on, I think it was the Mickey Mouse Club. When I was growing up, I was watching this thing. They're like, "Oh, we're going to show you how sound effects are done," and they showed me.
I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
A few like little cool things like that, and it's like, wow. That, and until I met Scott, I hadn't other than when I was a kid and saw that episode.
Right.
I didn't really think about sound effects.
You know what came also from even before "quote unquote" Foley was the radio shows.
Right.
There was a guy
Absolutely.
Who sat there with stuff.
Yeah.
He was part percussionist.
Yeah.
He had the little door, the sandpaper,
yeah.
and he's like. Hey, I got a great idea. Let me try this. And it was just stuff. And these guys, their job was to come up with interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And it and just progressed
right.
and more and grew. And you know.
And they performed that in real time. And if you ever listen to old-time radio shows, like if you have XM and you can get it, or even online now, it's amazing. Those guys were doing it live.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have an actor who opens a door, walks, is twirling his keys, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's all in perspective. It's like – How did they do
well,
that?
You know, when I was a little kid, I grew up in New York. And I used to go to the Radio City Music Hall. And down there, they used to – because radio was still existent then. and there was a guy. They do shows. And they would blah, blah, blah. And wasn't. It was just kind of phasing out at that time. And there was a guy who had, like, tables all the way around. He reminded me of a percussion player in an orchestra. And everything was set up. And he would just sit there. He had a script. He'd look at it, go, okay, jingle, 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 put it down, grab the door, you know, and they're just talking, and he'd just look at the script, and he goes, glasses at the end of his nose, he's wearing a little suit and tie, like, ka-donk, 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 you know.
You know what's crazy? I had no idea that that went on until a few years ago. My wife was in a play at our last church called 1940s Radio Hour. That's what they did on stage. It's in the script. When
right.
you had the doom, 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 like
right.
the NBC thing or whatever, like you literally had the three
the xylophone
chime,
or
yeah,
chimes,
the
yeah.
chime bars with the
yeah,
little
yeah.
mallet and the shakers and the You're talking about the footsteps.
Yeah.
This thing is hilarious. When you have somebody with a pair of shoes, like their hands are the shoes going clunk,
yeah.
clunk, 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 clunk.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But yeah, the whole it's in the script.
Yeah.
It's in the script. I was sitting there and it was on stage.
That's so cool.
Freaking believable. It was unbelievable.
That is so
you know what's
cool.
fun is sometimes it's great getting out of L.A., San Francisco, the big metro areas, and
yeah.
I end up doing some work in London, and it's interesting because like out here. It's very serious. A lot of people working on it. It's everyone's very dedicated. It's a big deal. When I was working with one of the mixers in England, he's like, "Yeah, you know, maybe I'll mix or maybe I'll be a driving instructor."
Mm.
And you're like, "What?" Because you know, and you look at other towns. It's a gig. You know, it's a job. It's kind of fun to do, but the glamour is not really there. And they just you know, and that's kind of the same thing in the old radio days. It's like, yeah, I got a gig, and it doesn't suck, but, you know, this is what I do.
Wow.
Right. But it's not a really good job. It's just a gig. You
wow.
know?
Good thing I don't live in London. Well, you know, it's just, it's you know, too bad it takes a passing of one of these legends
yeah.
for us to just be really appreciative of
And also, I don't know if you realize, John Hughes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
which, because I've done a ton of John Hughes' projects.
John Hughes is awesome.
And, you know, when John Hughes would work on a movie... He was always telling everybody what the next movie was.
Really?
So he would sit down, and I worked with him at the end, and my mentor, who worked with him a lot, but it was basically he'd come down and go, oh, guys, stop for a second. I got some ideas I want to pass by you. And he'd sit there, and he would, you know, hey, I got a Uncle Buck. Or, you know, she's having a baby. And he would sit there and look at you, like, the joke, was that funny? Okay. And he would just do it, and then that... He was always on the next thing, and I thought that...
Like mid-session while you were working
yeah, he's,
on...
Yeah, he's working on one movie. He's writing the next movie,
mm.
you know. And what I thought with John on the movie side was that he definitely defined a generation.
Yeah.
You know, with Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you look at all that.
Ferris Bueller.
I mean, you just look at this guy's scope of work. And
it still holds up.
I mean, the last thing I did with him was Flubber.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh.
So he produced it. We all went to Chicago. And he was a farmer. You know, he started off with the ad industry in Chicago, became a big film guy, never left Chicago, said, okay, if anyone wants to talk to me, you got to come to Chicago. And that's what would happen. Then we'd get a call going, John would like to meet with you. And you go, how's that going to happen? The plane will be waiting for you tomorrow. And then you go, okay, the limo will pick you up at 9. You go there, boom. It's like, how's it going? Lunch, blah, blah, blah. You talk a little bit. I'm glad to have you. Let me show you some of the picture. Great. Don't you got to get back on an airplane? Boom, back home.
Wow.
And you basically go out for a meeting.
Business was really good at that time, I guess.
Yeah, you know, right.
At least for him.
At that time, the revenue that John was bringing in, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it was, at that time, it was like guaranteed everything he did.
Well,
at that time was a hit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller, I mean, we were just talking about
it. It's classics. Yeah.
Those are classics.
Yeah.
Will go down in the all-time greatest lists.
No question.
Because we were talking just recently, like John fell off the face of the planet. I mean, like he stopped making movies altogether. I wonder what's going on.
And but don't forget Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Home Alone. I mean,
Home Alone, you can't forget that.
I mean, you think about so many just landmark classic things. It's fine if you wanted to take a little time off for
fun every now and then. Family just will last for decades. Mm-hmm. All those films.
Yeah, especially with the themes Bueller. And the characters.
Bueller. That built his career forever.
He built other Ben Stein's career was built.
We talk about music, but, you know, he defined all, like, the, oh, yeah, you know, that, the,
yeah.
And his whole thing was, that wasn't like some music producer guy going, hey, John, what is, I mean, he built his shows, he's like, I like that tune. I like that tune. I like that tune. And it's all about music for him.
It's brilliant. That's
dialogue, music, a little bit of sound effects. But music had to be thought and smart rather than, let me give you some pad here that just kind of gives you that emotion. It was all very strategic.
How was he in the mix? Was he active or was he – he wasn't?
No, we'd mix it. We'd ship it. He'd give us notes.
Really?
In Chicago on the farm.
So we would never even come down.
It's funny. I've got a handful of clients that the mix process for them is pretty much like, you know, as painful as it gets. Because you're sitting in a dark room listening to maybe, if you're lucky, 10 minutes of audio within a 24-hour period, like 2 days. 10 minutes over.
And in those days, it was forwards and backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards and backwards.
Yeah. So he'd be just like, you know what? And also for his shows, they weren't really stylized. They were just kind of – you needed the right effect at the right time and it had to be dead on. And it was all about the comedy. You got the music. You got the lines. The cutting was huge. Kind of fitted in. He trusted us enough and it was, you know, it was done.
Wow. Wow. That's a whole different paradigm than to what it is today.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Well, anyhow, so everybody go out and buy an electric guitar and
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. No deep thinking.
Play a Gibson and watch Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer, but you know, we're gonna move on. Mike,
they would want us to.
Yes,
they
would.
Actually, every time you go to a music store, the footprint that they've had on the business. You're seeing their footprint. It's amazing for anyone to have that legacy to go beyond their life.
Oh yeah,
you see their influence on an industry to this day.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Both of them are infinite.
Wow.
Yeah.
And on that note, Mike. Hope you can follow up the legends.
Are you up for the
Mike
challenge?
I had a plastic clarinet when I was 7.
So, I still use it today.
Didn't make it.
So we're gonna talk a little bit right now with Mike. You started off. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? Because apparently someone in this room had some influence.
Absolutely,
on you.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't Rob.
Though I did get to see it when a certain other person was having the influence. That's right.
I was going to school at Berklee College of Music and. Was trying to figure out how I was going to support a family.
Wow.
Scott's going to provide real-time jazz while I'm saying the story. Back in the day.
Okay.
We should just, we're going to have to do that by the time this is over. Like, you know, I have to, like, group beatbox it. So anyway, I was just trying to figure out how I was going to support a family now that I had this amazing opportunity at Berkeley and how I was going to do that. And then Scott came through. I saw this flyer on the door that, like, somebody put, like, on with, like, a cheap program, like Microsoft Word or whatever, like, you know, sound effects seminar today in this room. And I was like, wow, that's weird. Like, I wouldn't think that that would be at Berkeley, you know. So I decided to go, and Scott's talking as Scott does with being very animated, and he's playing, like, a scene from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and he had the volume down, and he's like, so, you know, I'm going to play you the scene, and it was a scene where the giant bee, I forget the name of the bee, but you knew the name of the bee. The bee, maybe. It was like the kids, the giant bee's, like, flying around. He's like, how would you do this? And I had just got my first sampler, which was an Insonic ASR-10 sampler that crashed all the time. I would spend hours sampling stuff in and then lose it all and keep resampling all the time. So anyway, so Scott was like, how would you make that sound? And I just suddenly had this Jones to put my hand up and say, I think I know how I would do that. And I'd never thought about sound effects ever really before. And so Scott's like, calls on me. And I said, oh, I'd probably, you know, shuffle some playing cards and then loop it and then, like, play, like, an octave in the lower register of the keyboard. So you have, like, the fast flutter and the big flutter and something like that, you know. And he's like, great, what machine are you going to use? And he's, like, totally putting me on the spot. And I'm like, ASR-10. And he's like, ah, and Sonic. So we hadn't even met. We're having, like, this little moment.
Oh, the connection was made.
Exactly.
I looked over.
Our eyes met. Talked about gear.
And Sonic?
So anyway, so after he was all done, and he had given this great speech about how he did it and stuff I never would have thought of, and then I approached him after with a couple other guys, and I'm like, hey, so, you know, what are you doing? He's like, oh, well, I'm starting a, you know, new company and part of Soundelux, and, you know, why don't you look me up? And so I, you know, within, I don't know, a couple months or something like that, I had wrapped things up at Berkeley, and then I flew out, and I was just like, hello, Scott's me.
Remember me and Sonic Boy.
That's right. Yeah.
That would have been awesome to introduce myself. So literally, like, we kept playing, well, it wasn't even phone tag. It was like, I'm too busy. Call me later. Call me next week. And I kept putting my resume together to do other stuff. And anyway, I finally got him to take an interview with me, and went in and I was awarded this gig and to be a sound effects designer. And I had no idea how to do the job, but I did this demo for him, and apparently he liked it, which I think maybe
we actually had
controlled,
like,
substances.
We had like eight people actually. Did the demo.
You beat out eight people.
Seven.
Seven.
I'm not that good.
No, it was great. And actually, I liked two of them. One was a gentleman named Brian Bowen, and one was Mikey's. And I liked the Mikey's because it had the energy and it had a funness to it. So what I ended up doing was I took Brian Bowen and put him in the library, gave him a temporary gig, and Mikey was my first designer at the Soundelux Media Labs at that time.
Wow.
So another girl was helping me out, and then we needed our first employee. So Mike was it.
Wow. Yeah. Employee number one.
And just to show goofy was, we were all on different floors.
Yeah.
When I first started, it's like, I need a room. And we got a room on this floor and another room on that floor.
I was literally up in accounting in a room, and that was the only room like it. It was the library, then a bunch of accounting people, and then, like, this room that was mine.
Wow. I bet the accountants really appreciated that, too.
What was the first project?
Pitfall.
For Super Nintendo.
That's right.
And wow. I knew Pitfall was coming, and that was part of the test.
Thinking ahead.
I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. And there wasn't visuals. I said, imagine you're this jungle guy, and you're racing through the jungle, and you're going to make these giant, like, fireball energy things. You create it, and you throw it, and you hit something. That's all I'm going to tell you. And I just left it at that. And I wanted to see what people came up with. And it was amazing. Some people, because you need to be like, you know, and just really neat stuff. And other people, one, Brian, like, did all the footsteps, all the crickets, all the, I mean, it was like, it was a radio show.
It was real. It was absolutely the most
But Mikey was putting, like, animal sounds on. I was like, oh, wow, check that out, man. So I was like, so that was cool. And,
Yeah. So that so then we started working together. Like, and I watched him do his thing, and that's how I met Rob.
Wow.
And you know, I always wanted to get back into music, and like, how am I? You know, I just went to Berklee College of Music, and how am I going to get back into that? And then
he fired you.
Yeah. So he start they started a music division, and then I went from doing sound effects on movies like Face Off and Negotiator and Godzilla and things like that. And watching Scott do his thing was like, he was just so into the controller, the technology, and just, it was just fun to watch. It's like, almost like if you get bored doing something the same way, Scott would just come up with a new way to do it just so it would be fun to do it. Like, it was totally functional what he was doing.
Right.
But it was also fun and cool using Cubase as a MIDI interface and controlling his waveframe and all that. It was just, it was crazy. And every time, I remember when I was thinking about, when I got the job, I'd go home and be like, oh, Scott did that sound. And, you know, like something be on television. And like, yeah, that sounds so cool. Scott probably did that.
You know, I will say one thing was fun. It's kind of like the first year of SNL. It was kind of like our first cast.
Right.
Figuring we've got like five casts already. And the first year was great was, we had a group of people that were totally aggressive technologically. And what I found, even though I was, you know, a little more ahead of the game, but they had their own ideas. And they were doing things, and I'm like, check that out. That's amazing. So then what happened was, we used to call it running together, conceptually. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, Mikey would do something, I'm like, damn, that's really cool. That gave me an idea, which gave Alan an idea, which gave Brian Bowen an idea, which gave Kel. And all these guys, we were all feeding off each other.
Wow.
Where it was like every day we learned something cool from each other. And I think the growth that we all grew was exponential.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Well, every one of those guys, whether you guys are still together or not, every one of those guys ended up being really good at what they're doing, really successful.
Being a daddy, I mean, all the guys on that, especially the first gen, or actually first gen and a half, are just kicking it
hard. And what year was it that Media Lab started?
87. 91.
Yeah, because I already knew you for a few years when you started it.
It was 91, 92 is kind of that opening.
That's right.
And you were with us for what, 8 years?
Four and a half. I came in 94.
Really? It seemed like eight.
Yeah. I literally had my all my gear after you gave me the gig.
Was it only four?
I had all my gear. Yeah, four and a half. I gave my gear packed up, ready to go. And the next morning, I was going to move all my stuff in, and that night, the earthquake happened, the 94
earthquake. Wow.
And if I hadn't had my stuff in boxes, I don't know if I ever would have actually gone in and got the job, because there was no gear for me to work on. Like, that's the only reason I was able to excel
at. You remember, at that time, we weren't just gaming. We were gaming, commercials, theme parks, whatever. And what was great was, because digital technology was still new.
Right.
And, we were all waveframe. There weren't samplers around. Pro Tools didn't exist. And, Sound Tools existed.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great was we were considered the ragtag team.
What did we call ourselves? There was
the ragtag team of
Or the Renegades.
It was like, we were those guys.
Yeah.
Did you guys have jackets?
Yeah. We actually did.
Nice.
But, you know, it was great because everyone looked at us as odd, especially in the film biz. And so we embraced it. We just said, okay, this is really fun.
Odd, but it also opened up opportunities for lower budget stuff that came in through Soundbox to go.
We talked about Michael Jackson.
Let's give
we did a ton of Michael
guys,
Jackson work.
You know? Like, we can do this project. We can give it to those guys, and those guys will work like nobody's business. And we did, because I was green. I didn't know. In fact, this is just a funny story. When I came back from Berklee, I was on welfare. And so I'd go down and stand online, like, you know, making $500 a month on welfare. And then so I'd work for Scott for free for like 3 or 4 weeks or something. And Scott, being the successful business owner that he is, goes, so I want to start paying you. So how much you want to make? And this is how green I was. I said, well, I got at least make $500 a month.
Done.
It's like, sign here.
So and he goes, how's $500 a week? And I'm just like, No shoot.
No shoot.
Wow, like wow. That was huge. You know, it was huge. And so
500 a week actually was something then.
That was good money then.
Okay, there are people who would line up to make that now. I got this for
right, that's what
the way the industry is.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm lucky I get that.
Yeah, there are plenty of weeks that looks okay.
I can't even pay somebody to interview for 500.
You're going to get a lot of resumes, buddy.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. This is a good spot. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll finish talking with Mike Reagan. We're going to talk about a bunch of other things, too. So, go get something to drink, and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. I've wanted to do that for 71 episodes. You know that? And now I've done it.
We're just a little out of control. And prior to the break, we were talking with Mike Reagan, and he was basically telling us a love story between him and Scott.
Hey, after 7, I felt great.
I will say, from back then, because I remember when all this stuff was going down, I'd already known Scott for a few years, and I used to go actually watch him work. It was on the 7th floor, right? Mm-hmm. In the cave, as it was called.
That's right.
And I used to go and watch him do his thing, because he was kind of nuts. But I do remember when Mikey, as he was called. Does anyone still call you Mikey?
Yeah.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if
I
that
think
was
it started with
Mr.
You.
Reagan.
Was honestly, it? Yeah, I think so.
But I remember the first time I met Mikey, and back in those days, Scott was just feeding off of your energy because you were like the wild, crazy kid who was willing to just try anything, and you were musical, but you were also doing sound design. And I remember it was a good match.
It was fun. No, I mean,
he gave you had an impact.
And then that's the awesome. Incident, and it all came apart.
We won't talk about that.
We like to call it the evolution.
It was another piece of gear.
Well, the cool thing about back then, too, was there were no rules. I mean, what you guys were doing at Media Labs was a whole new thing.
That's right.
The idea of a video game sound company and commercial sound company.
We still have some meetings at times. Like, how do we deal with this?
Yeah.
Well, because no one had ever really thought that way before. It was a whole new thing.
Yeah. And the guys that were Scott's, you know, peers, right. You know, were like, what is Scott doing down there?
Yeah, but I got news for you. They already thought he was nuts. So that wasn't that much of a stretch, really. That's what they liked about him.
Right, right.
So what are you doing now, Mike? You're a composer, and you still...
I'm hanging wallpaper now.
Hey, for Scott, man, actually. He whistles a lot.
No, I'm doing more music now. Like, I don't think I've done sound effects for probably, I don't know, 6 years or something like that. But I sure appreciate it a hell of a lot more now, having been through it.
Right.
And I love it. Music was something that I've always had in me that I wanted to do. And the thing that was cool about sound design was that you got to kind of do a little bit of both in some weird kind of way.
Right, right.
But now I'm doing video game scoring, and which is great because there's
a
lot.
In a big way.
Gods of War. That's a kind of a big title.
Yeah, that's and what's great about the video game thing is that it just seems easier to record live for video games than it does for television, at least on my level. Like, I know that there's guys at much higher levels than I am that can, you know, hey, we score it, you know, at Fox every week or something like that for some other show. But,
right.
Like, I've done a couple of TV series, like, for Film Roman and Nickelodeon, and it's really tough. Like, budgets are shrinking, and it's hard to, like, get stuff live. But, you know, I do a video game, and they're like, yeah, we're going to go up to Skywalker and record whatever, 80 musicians or 40-piece choir or whatever.
And you pretty much played all the instruments, didn't you?
Yeah.
Is that what you did for Gods of War?
Because
that's a huge soundtrack. I mean, that's big. That's
well,
a
we
big
did,
sound.
We did the first one, all we did was choir.
Right.
And a sampling session with this guy, Michael Masley, that I found. Like, remember when we used to go to the San Jose game developers conferences. Mm-hmm. There was a guy that was playing a cymbalum, and he had like these metal bows that he had made for his fingers. So he could tap the cymbalum with his fingers, but he could also bow them, you know, and make these like...
What's a cymbal?
How would you describe a cymbalum? It's like a hammered dulcimer or something.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
A good way to describe it.
Something like that. So I talked to him and talked to Sony, and we got this sampling session. He basically drove in like a VW bus to this to Pyramine Studios up in the Bay Area, and he had all these weird instruments and like stuff where he would take like a vase, and he called it the bass vase, and he'd put this huge rubber band over it, and he'd get really close on the mic and just like barely thump the rubber band. It was just like the lowest, like. Look like 808 kick drum on steroids or something like that, you know. And so we made all these instruments, and that was kind of how we sculpted like the first one, and then with live choir. And the second God of War, we did what did we do? We did Brass in London. We did Brass in London at Abbey Road. And so and none of the composers went except for one of our composers went. But we were all, like, staying up around the clock, doing the live feed, the Pro Tools plugin. I forget what you use to do, you know, live stuff like that remotely, you know.
Right.
Okay. And you say something like, yeah, I like that take. And, like, 8 seconds later they hear, yeah, I like that take. So, and then they did, like, choir in Prague. And we're doing, like, a similar kind of thing. I think there's more, like, local recording going on right now for that. It's been great. It's kind of come back full circle.
And what do you use to compose? What's your software platform of choice?
I use Logic, and I just actually migrated from like multiple Giga Studios to getting it done on two Macs and having things talk to a Pro Tools rig. So, it's just been a technical nightmare, like figuring out the right order to boot stuff up in so your computer behaves and to get that all to work right. But that's basically it.
You got rid of the Giga samplers and you're using the ES sampler?
Yeah, ESX, Contact, Play Engine and all that. And I heard it got bought back again.
Oh, really? Did it actually? Yeah, I hadn't heard that yet.
I forget who.
Is it coming back?
It makes sense that someone would.
Yeah. Hope it does, because it's a terrific platform.
It is.
I worked on it for 5 years on lots of projects, so I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Well, that's cool. So Logic, so are you excited about Logic 9?
I'll be excited after everyone else uses it for a year and tells me, it's finally working the way they want it to work. It looks amazing. The whole time stretch thing, the whole thing, all that stuff looks pretty.
Yeah, but there's no reason to be the first kid on the block.
I can't anymore. Scott, I learned the first kid on the block thing from Scott, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever until I had to do a TV series.
I used to be 6'3" and just, you know.
It's just
leading edge, you know.
I can't do that.
It's like when a new version of Windows comes out or, you know, Snow Leopard comes out. It's fine if you have an extra computer to set it up in the corner and get familiar with it and play with it, but don't ever switch in the middle of an important project. It's just not worth it.
I couldn't even switch in the beginning of a project because I've spent the last 3 months dialing in a rock-solid system that has everything online I could possibly want.
Wow.
And now that I've got it, and God of War starting, I'm like, no, I'm staying here till, if I stay busy, I might not switch for 2-3 years.
Well, your clients don't care what you use.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just care that they like the music.
And then you're not late.
Right, which you will be as soon as you try any new toy. Right?
Well, that's great. Well, you know, it's really amazing that, like you said, you've come full circle. You start off in music and then you went to sound effects and now you're back into music. Do you find that, you know, having your sound effects backgrounds, has it helped you with just the concepts of like hits and like energy and things of that nature?
Yeah, actually, here's a question. When you write your music, do you leave an opening for sound effects or do you cover it instinctually? Because you want to add like a, you know.
I try and leave holes because it's so interesting. Like I've learned so much about sound design by listening to film scores. So the whole time I was working on movies where they had these amazing composers doing film scores, I noticed like where they would leave room and how sometimes how thin the music sounded. If you like just solo the music, there's not a lot going on, but it's all about the emotional content of what's happening and what the scene needs. And it doesn't need, you know, just because you have 600 tracks available in your sequencer doesn't mean you're going to use them when there's a, you know, a very quiet dialogue scene.
Yeah, that's true.
We've talked about it before. You're never going to win the battle against sound effects anyway.
Like the last movie that I did, or one of the movies I did just recently, the composer thought it was really kind of smart to do percussion woodblocks over the gun battle.
No.
And I'm like, and we're hearing the guns, I'm like, why is everything so, what is that?
The trick is to name that cue.
You can't hear it. And then, and we took all the sound effects out, and went this, and I'm like, get rid of that. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, he should have just named that cue the theme from No One Will Ever Hear This. Because that is going to be the first thing you get. Because
you said, what element is it? You know, the melody's great and the strength, but why do the guns sound mushy?
That's the big thing we're learning just from doing all the God of War stuff. Now that we're on the third one, it's like, you know, what have we learned? Like, what did we learn from the first one? Well, you know, they wanted it bombastic and, like, brick wall limited, like, to the nines, you know, and just crazy percussion and everything just going full force. Because when the producers are listening to these tunes, they're listening to them on headphones and imagining them in their game.
Right.
And sometimes don't have a chance to get them in the game to see how they're going to work. So you do something that you knew would work with sound effects, and you get notes back saying, bigger or something like that. And it's a constant battle to, like, try and kind of, you know, walk them through what's really going to work with that.
Then that's when you fly out, you come to the office, turn the volume, turn it up, leave, get back on the airplane, go back and say, what was that?
But yeah, like the gun battle, like that's your percussion. Like the things that are going to work with that are like long notes, long horns, long strings.
Horses and guns, percussion, not so much.
Bye-bye.
That's one of the things, Mike, that we've talked about on the podcast is during the Godzilla days for the Godzilla trailer.
Yeah.
It was basically us, Noisy Neighbors versus Sound Deluxe, because you guys were doing the giant footsteps and the screams and everything else.
Right.
We're doing the music, and, I mean, we had all this great music for where Godzilla's foot would come through the ceiling or crush something, and they could have just left silence there.
Mm-hmm.
It was all going to be about incredibly gigantic footsteps and destruction and all that stuff, and it was a really valuable lesson. Basically, everybody has to cooperate for everybody to be heard.
That's right.
And it was a beginner mistake for us.
Were you getting guidance from them? Like, when they heard, did you put big drums and stuff on the footsteps? No. And then they would say, bigger?
No, we learned in the mix, actually, for the first trailer what was going to win because it was a billion dB. I mean, the footsteps were so loud. It was actually the loudest trailer in history. And it's what... Seriously.
It was.
And that's why
how do you quantify that?
Because it is actually the trailer that started the whole movement to have trailers being volume regulated.
You're kidding.
Because it was, I think the first trailer was attached to Independence Day and all the theaters were playing the movie soft because the trailer was so loud.
When we were mixing the trailer. Now, what's interesting to me, like recording studios and dubbing stages.
Oh my God.
We had a soundproof dubbing stage followed by hallway, followed by offices, followed by a very thick brick wall. And you can actually hear this mix
outside. Yeah.
And it wasn't subtle. So we're sitting there all at this mix. And, you know, and the head person who also had a head cold, which didn't help, she's like, you know, I just need to feel it. It's just got to be more. Now, we were already so far in the red.
So you passed her some
on the console. And all the mixers, she's like, you know, it's just not big enough. And
the meters just looked like it was in test mode. They weren't even moving. They were just
I
all
really
LEDs
thought
on.
10 minutes ago I saw the sub fly by me.
Did you just put her closer to the speaker set? Or?
The mixers all looked at me and they went, it physically can't get louder.
Right.
You can't print this.
Yeah.
So we literally turned it up to probably 11. About 95 to 98.
11.
We brought it up at least 10 dB.
Oh, my God.
And you got to remember, we're at 85 dB. This is like
it's
95
like a
to 90.
Engine.
Oh, yes. It was. I mean, it was, okay, you can now listen. We're all going to leave.
Yeah, right.
Hit play.
We'll listen from the street.
And she's like, I think I could feel it. What she wanted to do is feel it. She didn't want to hear it. She wanted to feel it.
Just crank like 80 hertz.
You should have just kicked her in the shin.
Well, you know, we did it because she wanted to feel it so much. When we did it at Show West, this big, the first time it was going to happen, no one even heard about it. We actually created seat shakers.
Oh, good.
So when the foot comes down, forget about listening to it. You felt it.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom! You know, we had like 100 seat shakers all going, you know. And
so I'm not kidding when I say it was the loudest trailer in history.
It was.
And I was the idiot thinking I'm going to write music that's going to compete with that footstep. And there was nothing. I mean, we used a 100-piece symphony orchestra for that first trailer. And it gets heard. It gets heard in the gaps quite a bit. I mean, it ended up being fun. But we honestly could have written just, you know, a triangle hit or something for the footsteps. It wouldn't have made any difference because the footstep was so loud.
That's funny.
But it's, you know, beginner mistake.
That was one through the museum.
What's that?
The foot through the museum.
Oh, right. Yeah.
To the Natural History Museum.
So let me ask you, now, do you notice any trends in your composing for video games? Do you notice for a while there was, you know, it seemed like people fell in love with the big orchestras and things like that. I mean, what's kind of the direction of video games nowadays as far as when composing goes?
I think Scott was talking about this earlier offline with me that it used to be that the production value when there wasn't a lot of money to go around for recording live orchestras. Right. The trick was to have this production quality that made it sound like you did record some things live. And so there was this kind of, you know, jockeying for position to be the guy who – don't even listen to them, any melodies or harmonies. Just how real does this sound? Is that a big – you know, is that a French horn rip that we've heard like a million times or whatever? And how did he get that in that little box that has no memory? And that's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And now – the lid's blown off with PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and now you can record linear audio, and you can have multiple streams going in a game and, like, mute and unmute and crossfade streams. So it's no longer a sample box that you have to, you know, just give them a MIDI file that works inside, like, you know, PlayStation 2 or something like that. So now the playing field is completely changed where everybody has the same samples, you know, the same sample libraries and has been doing this for a while now where it's pretty easy to make it sound – if you have any level of music competence, it's not hard to make it sound real.
Right.
And now the trick is, like Scott was saying, now people – okay, yeah, it's all real. We get that. Now what's it making me feel? So now like producers are kind of past all that because they're going and recording with 100-piece orchestras either in L.A. or Skywalker or London or wherever, and they're used to that. So now you actually – now composers actually have to have harmonies and melodies and structure and build over time and like actually compose music, you know. And
put the emotion back in.
And the production values, I think – I think it's way surpassed TV.
Right.
And I'd say it's probably definitely in the film realm.
Wow.
Quality-wise and complexity. And
it's just expected now.
Oh, absolutely. That's the bar. And that's not even the high bar. That's the standard bar.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. When you're talking about multiple streams of audio, let's say is it – because I play a lot of games, and I pay attention to the music more now than I ever have. And it seems like sometimes it's like they have a base, like a master track, like it could be rhythm or something. And depending on what I do, it like flawlessly crossfades to like a different instrument joining in. But it's not always at the same moment in time. So like I could be doing, I could wait a little bit and it's still playing that thing, you know, whatever the theme is, and then react, and then it crosses over.
It just
and
depends it's all on like
in, it depends on the trigger.
It's all like in time. But what's amazing, and that way, that's why when you said the multiple tracks, it makes sense because it does it perfectly. I mean, you don't drop a note. It's not like in the old days when, you know, a little skip or a little day. I mean, it's like it was composed that way. And so is that basically, you know, you giving the programmer, you know, 12 stems, let's just say, and they have a different, you know, version of the song or maybe a different part
of
the song.
That's pretty much it.
And it does, like, live mixing as you're going
along. Well, and as a composer, you have to write – I mean, I know there's different philosophies. Like,
it's 3D writing, Mike.
It is. You have to be able to – you're imagining what's going to happen, and you have to know, okay, what things do I have to combine and what tracks should these be on to be separate? And, you know, like some – I Sony has a different philosophy, and I love this part of it because their philosophy, they have an in-house team now, and Chuck Dowd, who kind of begat that whole team over there, their philosophy is hire composers that know how to write music. They'll take care of all that other stuff in-house. So you'll supply them with stems, and they have guys in there that'll get stuff moving.
Right, that'll program it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Well, hey, thanks for coming and joining us today, Mike. I mean, that was awesome, you know, and it's great to hear. The good thing about this whole story is hearing the evolution of you going, starting from sound effects and $500 a week to writing music.
All right, all right.
To writing music for $250 a week. But do you have any suggestion for, like, any guys that are out there starting out, you know, wanting to do basically what you do? Because there's probably a lot of guys
that would love your job.
I mean, what kind of advice would you give?
I'd say give me a call and intern for me.
For $250 a week.
No, I don't know. I think just write great music. And then as far as, like, you know, getting your stuff to people, just keep writing and rewriting and just carving your demo and go to composers' websites and listen to what they're doing and kind of, you know, follow suit with what they're doing and then pick up the phone and start calling people and join GANG, the Game Audio Network Guild, is a great place to meet people. And
you know, the one thing that you said is really important, I think, is writing music. You know, they got to learn how to write music. You get a lot of people that want to be a composer and they're into the technology, they're into the sequencers, they're into that. But it was really interesting what you said. It's all about the music, because if you can write the music, Sony has guys that can help with everything else, you know?
Yeah. It's like what Foley is to motion pictures. You know, if you're noticing the Foley, the whole point is, like, you're not supposed to notice, wow, what a great cloth movement that was, or whatever, or jacket crinkle, or chair creak, because I was having a conversation in an office chair. It's like that's supposed to be there so that you feel like you're there, and I think music is supposed to do the same thing. In games, you're not supposed to go, wow, well, considering the technology, like, producers just want to hear great stuff.
And also, I think what's interesting with music and video games is that I've heard a lot in TV and in certain types of movies, they're very cognizant of the fact they don't want to piss anyone off. Because it's a certain kind of genre, or it's kids' movie, or they said, well, we want to be safe.
Right.
Video games, the moment you say the word, I'm doing a video game, you've pretty much pissed off 50% of the population, you know, who thinks pretty much you're a demon. So at that point, there's no safety net.
Right.
It's not like, well, we don't want to offend anyone because we just already did because we just said the word video game.
Right.
And God forbid it's not a Wii or a sports game, but some form of fantasy or any kind of aggression, all of a sudden every mom's like, you know. So I think right then it gives the ability to be more experimental.
Right.
To do things. And I find a lot of people in video games are experimenting a lot. I mean, do you find that, Mike, that they're conceptually
They're building. But I
think it's almost like records, you know, where
I think they're building their own instrument sets too. Like that's one thing I love about John Powell's stuff is that he's a sampling maniac and he'll create his own instruments and then build pieces out of that because he gets inspiration from that or just add that to something as a nice little, you know, ornament or something. But yeah, I think game guys are doing that, but I don't think any more than
film
guy. No, I think they're learning from the film guys.
It's similar to the edgy film stuff, but TV, I found not all of it, especially the mainstream TV, not some of the cable stuff. A lot of times people want to be aggressive and energetic, but not too much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't give me anything that's too evil sounding. Yeah,
don't distract me from my story.
But
games is so, you know, we're hacking and slashing or we're searching and, you know. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for coming and joining us. That's, you know, and talking about video games. And, you know, if you're out there, pick up Gods of War because that's a great game, but it's rated M. So just don't play with your kids around.
Thanks, man.
But it's a fantastic, fantastic game. Before we go, and I want to keep this relatively short because we went like an hour and a half last time.
Yes. We're still tired from that.
We still got a little time. But, I wanted to talk a little bit with Johnny here because Johnny has a band and they play locally. And he recently just went on a little tour. And I just wanted to, talk to him a little bit about your experience going out and playing with some clubs and stuff, because I know there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast that are kind of starting out where you are. How was that? How was your tour? You were gone for you guys played for what, like a week?
For a couple weeks. I mean, it is what it is as a musician coming from the Midwest and moving to Los Angeles. You know, you have the dream that, like, I'm going to make it, and then you move to L.A. and then – or it was around the time that the music industry began to collapse on itself. But there's a lot to say about that because it's really good for younger artists like myself, because now the walls have been broken down to do whatever you want with the internet stuff, and you guys have talked about that. You've covered the basis on that topic, but we went out and you have to do it. And right now it's the big thing I'm in is like trying to learn how to produce my own recordings, because a lot of young musicians want to be famous and they want to be rock stars, but they're not understanding that the game has changed. And if you're not producing or are knowledgeable enough to produce your own material, no one's going to do it for you like how they used to with whatever A&R. That doesn't even exist anymore.
Right.
If you don't know how to engineer your own stuff, for the most part, you're paying somebody else tens of thousands of dollars if you want
that
it
you
done
don't have.
That you don't have if you want it done right, because anybody can grab Logic or any or Pro Tools or whatever with a Digi-O2 unit and track with a quarter inch cable into the Digi unit, and it's going to sound like what it is. It's not going to be exciting. It's going to sound like there's a blanket over it,
right.
So it's just what it is. If you want to do it right, you have to like scrap the money together and work wherever we work to get $500 a week so I can put that away and go in for one day, to buy, save up enough money for, like a grand to go for one day and do a studio session for 16 hours to do 13 tracks of just drums. Because you can't be like,
half of that's taken up by trying to get freaking drums down.
And then you're doing it, then you're going to end up, possibly just because of the, a big story of it is that, sound, the budgets aren't the same. It's like, so you have to make do. You got $1,000 to do a drum session. That's it. So you crank out what you can, and then at the same time you're working your day job. At the same time you're trying to go tour. And
did you book all the shows yourself?
I booked all the shows myself. I run the website with the drummer actually helps me, but you end up doing everything yourself, and there's no one magic label that's going to rescue you anymore, and you just it's all niche stuff now.
How'd you get the gigs? You just start calling clubs? Or
we were predominant in the Midwest. We had done a lot of work around the Missouri and in that box, like from Omaha to Atlanta, and in that like triangle of, and you just have those connections still, and you can go back any time, and you'll still play in front of a couple hundred kids.
Right.
Was it a
one van tour?
One van tour. Let's say you're sleeping in the
Love Leg drummer,
huh? Right? $50 on a hotel room in a Motel 6 in Lawrence, Kansas.
We got a Motel 6.
Yeah, right.
It's funny. A lot of
five guys, one bed.
Yeah, right.
A lot of LA kind of a lot of indie bands in LA don't realize the best thing they can do is get out of LA, because you will get much bigger appreciative audiences.
That's the one thing moving to Los Angeles. I noticed that the people coming to see shows, people be like, "Oh, great, that's great. You're in a band. That's neat." Yeah,
it's just oversaturated.
No one's gonna come see your band, and even then, it's like it's not the same thing.
Five people at your show. Background music for a social gathering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And not if you're a loud rock band, nobody cares. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Talking over you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like
because there's 5,000 bands like you.
A punk band. Can you bring it down a little bit?
Yeah, right.
I'm trying to talk.
It's true. And that's fine and good. That's what it is. And it's like the focus turns back to studio. Mm-hmm. And you have to really become strong at that. And if you don't, because, I could only name like two bands ever out of the hundreds or even thousands of bands that I love, anybody loves, mm-hmm. that you saw live first. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to hear the record first, and then you're like, oh, then you go see the band, and then this is when the touring is most effective. And that,
the only way that isn't the case is if you get a good opening act slot, and then people see you by accident.
Which nowadays you have to pay people for.
Right.
If you want to jump on a good slot like that, like $40,000, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Because you can make 40.
Wait, seriously?
A real good slot, a real big one. Like I'm talking.
Because if you don't want it, someone else.
Right,
and
they'll get it for a discount rate if they're already under a label that has some type of clout or whatever. And I mean, like, for we get likened to 311 a lot, right? Because we grew up in that, like, Incubus, Rage Against the Machine, Sublime era of music. Coming from the Midwest, we're like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah, we want to move to Southern California, too, and sleep in a two-bedroom apartment in Park La Brea. You know, like, five dudes in a two-bedroom apartment.
You make it sound so glamorous.
Yeah. And these kids keep going.
Yeah, the chicks just like it.
Yeah, but that's what it is, you know.
Actually,
it all pays off.
Hearing what you're saying, like hearing what you asked me before, like what would I recommend to people do? Just I think a lot of it is have stupid, blind ambition.
Yep.
Yes.
Where you and be tenacious as hell. Like you want it and you love it so much that you can't stop because it's what you feel like you're called to do, and you have to be willing to like walk through hellfire to get it.
But also, I think when you're younger. There's nothing to lose. You have no money.
Yeah, right.
It's
right.
not like you're going to lose any of it. You have no house. You actually have no belongings other than your stuff.
No, but I'll wrap it up the same way with Mike. Basically, my story is yours, except for that I went into, like, theatrical editing. You know what I'm saying? And I got into that, like, by dumb luck. And I'm doing that. And it's funny because it's the exact same thing with sound design. With editing, it's basically just selecting music and putting like quick sound effects on stuff. It's just it's the same thing. Like I'm blessed, you know, to do that.
Yep.
But at the same time, I go home after working a 10-hour day, and I work another 4 hours editing in Pro Tools or whatever, just trying to tweak sound. You know, that's the life you choose. You know,
and that's what I did for Scott too. Like I would work a full day doing sound effects design, and then when Scott was like, "Hey, I'm opening up a music thing," and he brought two guys in who had tons and tons of music. Like they brought in like CD cases. Like, well, these 8 CDs are jazz. These are some of my jazz stuff. And I'd never completed a song in my life. I was just like, I had all these songs that were like, yeah, I got some cool verses and some cool choruses, but nothing finished. And I would have to go home and stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning trying to prove to Scott that I had chops to do.
But
music
that's why
stuff.
You're scoring God of War. You know what I'm saying? Because you had that ambition and blindness to be like, I don't care, I'm doing it.
A huge amount of ignorance and stupidity. You if you actually think, like when we now look back, like I look back at like my path. And I'm thinking, what was I thinking? Because what you're doing, it's you know, it's like, look, watch like skateboarders or guys doing stuff. You go, I would never do that.
Yeah,
but then you think, oh, wait a minute, I did. Yeah. Because you don't think about, like, because you have nothing to lose. I mean, now it's interesting, and I'm a different stage in my life. And then you think, like, wow, if I make this choice, there's a downward. You can go down quite a bit. But when you're younger, there is no down. You're pretty much at the bottom.
You're right.
So you think like, what the heck? And you do quit. You get the 5 guys or 4 guys in a room.
Yeah, right.
And you think it's totally normal.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, this is great. And girls show up and like, what is these stains?
Well, hey, listen, we're going to have to wrap it up. But Johnny, good luck, buddy.
No, thanks for having me, man. I've been listening for a long time, so.
Well, no, cool. You know what? I will tell you that he asks all the right questions because he's asking me questions all the time.
Well, that's good. That's good.
But and I've heard his stuff, and it's the name of your band is why don't you tell
Logic. It's also a computer program.
Yeah. Never heard of it.
A very ironically named computer program.
Yeah, right. When I heard about it, I was like,
Logic with a question mark?
Logic.
Where's the? Do you have a web page or?
Yeah, it's Planet Logic, but we spelled Logic with a J. because we were in high school and we were like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool, right?
Yeah, right. And then, like, you regret it kind of.
Nobody will ever find you.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I actually have gone for like Logic.
I'm trying. I can't find the band. You know?
LOJIC is like the Louisville District of Water. I'm like, oh.
.org. .org.
PlanetLogic.com. LOJIC.
Is the band actually with a J or with a G?
No, it's with a J. And I don't think Apple could ever sue us either.
That's beautiful.
Logic.
Logic.
That's good.
It looks good when you write it. So.
Right. And in L.A., it's Lohic.
Yeah. Have you even remembered how many times you showed up to a venue and it's been spelled with a G and we're like, oh.
It's just how the music's like, do you have a Lohic? Lohic? What?
All right, so, Rob, you working on anything interesting?
I am. Actually, yeah, I can start to talk about things a little bit more. I'm actually working with seven. It's true. I can actually talk about it. I'm working in varying degrees with seven different musical projects right now, some of which are going to be surfacing pretty soon. Actually, two of them people can start to check out. One is a sort of a rhythmic funk jazz project called Waltology, and you'll be able to find out about that at waltology.com pretty soon. I'm not sure exactly when this is going to post, but these are all things that are – if they're not released when this gets posted, they'll be released soon. Another is an artist named Fox Fagan, who I think I've spoken about a bit on here before. We just finished an EP with him called Never Fall in Love with a Stranger, and that's going to be up at foxfagan.com. And actually at noisyneighbors.com, you'll be able to get linked to all these different things that we're working on. But a lot of interesting music projects. And then to fund a lot of these projects, we're also doing a lot of TV mixing for A&E and for National Geographic and for other projects. So, yeah, at times we have two or three mix rooms going like round the clock, as well as working on all this music at the same time. And I'm actually writing software for Stevie at the same time.
Wow.
And then in my spare time, I blink once every 3 days. But the musical stuff really still gets me going, and I really enjoy it. And actually, a lot of the stuff we're working on relates to what you were talking about with you know, trying to get a young indie band out there. One of the bands I'll be talking about soon is fronted by twin brothers who are 22. And they're just at the beginning of this whole journey, and it's really exciting and fun. And our seven acts range in age from early 20s up to about 40. Right. Very different musical styles, but it's going to be really interesting once it's all out there. And I will defy people to guess, without knowing the history, which of the acts are the 20-year-olds and which are the 40-year-olds.
Wow.
A lot of really interesting stuff, and all very different, but all really good, solid music with really solid songwriting, which I am pleased to say is coming back. It's less about production tricks.
It has to.
It's much more about good songwriting than it used to be. It's about real emotion. It's about lyrics that actually mean something.
Thank God.
Yeah, right.
It took a long time, but that really has come back.
Thank God.
It really has. It
took a long time. First. Yeah.
Hey, believe it or not, I'm actually going to be in an indie film. I spent three or four days actually playing the part of this rebel hippie. For this film that's coming out, it's so funny because it kind of fits me. It's like this community of people basically that's against the government that's trying to take away their rights, which some people
might. By Oliver Stone?
Man, I wish I could even tell you the name of the movie because I don't know it. I'm actually in it.
Well, when it comes out, you're going to have to let us know.
Yeah, it's definitely going to come out first. I saw the first film that came out by this same company, and it's really happening. And the way this came about is, you know, a singer-songwriter friend of mine from Canada has started getting the lead roles.
Wow.
And she insisted that these producers and directors call me and said, oh, he fits the description you're talking about, and I feel like he can really do this thing.
Wow.
Besides that, getting this live trance out there, kind of not, I'm of course still doing the metal thing, but now I'm focusing on this other deal and really getting it more into production now with two different groups right now, besides myself. Finally started my own CD. Which I'm happy about too. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm excited.
Scott, how about you?
I'm quitting sound effects and going into music. What's happening with me? I don't know. I've been working a lot, which is good in this climate. I've got a movie coming out for Labor Day? Is that the next holiday? Called Gamer. Right. Gerard Butler.
Trailer was good.
Yeah. So hopefully that does pretty good. And finishing up Season of the Witch, and within several weeks start the new and improved reinvention of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Wow.
That should be fun. So Freddy Krueger.
That should be
Dave,
fun.
Dave England going
to? No. They got it's a whole new... It's a whole new thing. I mean,
so it's going to be actually. You think it's going to be scary this time?
You know, I don't know. I haven't seen any footage. They hired a director named Sam Baer, and he's an amazing. He did Teen Spirit?
Okay.
And he's done some amazing music videos. He has just an absolutely off the charts visual sense.
Oh, great!
And so I'm excited to see what he's come up with. I think I'm supposed to meet with them in about a week and a half.
Great.
So they're going to show me the beginnings of it, and that'll take me till after Christmas.
And they found a newer, scarier Freddy Krueger?
Yeah, they've got a new guy, and it's up on all
I heard it was Ann Coulter. Is that not true?
Oh, no.
Dick Cheney.
That might be too scary for me to check out.
Except he's got a shotgun rather than.
Nice.
But. There's a lot of stuff on the net about who the new actor is, and that's all I know, and probably if I did know, I probably couldn't even say.
Right.
So, it's exciting and.
Great.
Yeah.
And Mike, what are you working on? What's your next thing?
Right now, just God of War 3, and I actually had my first feature film come out.
Wow.
A very limited film theater release, and it went to DVD, and it's called Unbeatable Herald, and it was cool. I got to do like soul horns kind of stuff and fun, silly kind of romantic comedy.
That's cool.
Nice. And... waiting to see if Wawa Wubsy goes another season, and also Ape
My
Escape.
Son loves him. He just sings along.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So you're keeping busy. Well, that's really good.
And what are you doing, Mike?
You want to know what I'm doing? I'm going on vacation.
All right.
Literally. As you should.
What? Literally. As soon as we hit stop, I'm on vacation. So, yeah. I'll have about 10 days off. So
no computer, no cell phone, no...
No, please.
This is Mike you're talking about.
I'm taking my computer. I can't live without my computer, really. No. Seriously.
Computers.
Now, actually, for me, you know what? I love being creative, and if I can get away and, you know, be creative for days, you know, without... the normal hassles of, you know, every day. It's great.
Well, let's face it. Mike is definitely the guy on the beach looking for the electrical outlet. No. There's no question.
I'm sorry.
Jimmy.
No. Listen, I love spending time with my kids. I love spending time with the family.
But
on your computer.
But if I'm going to have my computer, I'll be back at the hotel. Yeah. And they'll be at the pool.
Okay. How old are your kids?
My kids are 6, 11, and 16.
Wow, so between the three of them, they could probably carry about 20 laptops.
That's right, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. They're spoiled, too, because I'm into video games, and so...
That's when they go in the hotel room and text each other.
Yeah. Cool dad.
Well, have a good time on your vacation.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun, and I'm looking forward to it. I finished working on a couple independent projects, and when I get back, I'm actually directing a video and doing some other stuff, so it'll be kind of fun.
Do you Twitter on vacation?
I'm now getting
no, I hate
water.
Twitter.
I'm now on vacation. I'm now getting into the car.
I am so anti-Twitter. I barely like Facebook. I mean, the cool thing about Facebook is it's like you can connect with like friends and stuff like that, right? But Twitter, I just don't want to follow anybody.
Yeah,
Twitter.
I can't get with that hype.
I'm not sure which is weirder. Who's got the time to Twitter? who's got the time or cares
to read it.
Like, I'm now going to the bathroom.
See, all of this social networking stuff, I think it's time somebody starts like anti-social networking, where you can like have a Twitter account and just don't say anything.
Yeah.
Just like sit in the corner and say, leave me alone.
Or I just wish you could have like a shut up button.
Or talk in person.
Yeah.
There is that. That does still work.
You know, the phone.
Yeah.
Or like the Facebook, like, you know, Rob Arbitier has invited you to not do anything.
Exactly. Anti-social networking. That's I'm telling you.
I don't mind like Facebook somebody doing, you know, occasionally one witty remark. But when it becomes play-by-plays, I'm like, wow.
Who has time?
You've now taken over 10 postings on my 15-posting Facebook. I'm like...
Yeah. I get Facebooks that are like, you know, so-and-so just threw a pie at you. I'm like, delete.
Actually, my thing would be like, Rob Arbitier invites you to keep your opinions to yourself. You know? Things like that. I would definitely do that.
Well, you guys can follow my vacation on Facebook because I will be posting.
Oh, right.
One other thing I want to say, Mr. Summerfield has been actually out of the country. He's about to come back.
Sorry.
Yes. But he wanted to say hi to everybody out there, and he's looking forward to being back here.
Hello!
Hello!
He's looking forward to being back here.
Well.
Mike is going, I don't get it.
How do you follow that one up? Well, hey, listen, if you have a question or a comment for us, you can always reach us on our Facebook page.
Of course.
Lovely.
Or you can send us an email at audio@nowcast.network.com.
The Facebook, I mean, do we have a farm yet?
We've got a Facebook page. What's a Facebook farm?
This is part of Facebook that I ignore.
Yeah.
My wife sucked me into this. I'm screwed.
Are you serious?
No, the farm game that you're talking about. Right?
You know what?
I have no idea.
Okay, what it is. Okay, like my life is filled with ridiculous deadlines. And I go, and my wife's like, oh, you got to play farm. I'm like, why do I want to play something that needs me to do something at a certain time?
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, it's something. So I said, no. So her and her friend keep sending me. So now I went farm. So what am I doing?
Ignore.
At 1 o'clock in the morning,
right.
I'm harvesting my frickin' farm.
Yeah.
It's a drug because I want to buy the house.
Yeah.
And the fence in the pond.
Oh my god.
All right.
Make it stop.
We got to end the podcast so we can
you can get the farm.
Mike, what are you actually trying to say?
I'm actually trying to say goodbye. Well, hey, listen. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us through our Facebook page or our MySpace page, which is myspace.com/audionowcast. And you can also send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
And we've been money, don't we?
We've been getting emails, right? We'll answer some next time.
And actually, we have some emails that we need to answer.
So next time, let's start off with that so we can...
Well, I'm actually waiting for Bobby to come back because some of them are kind of technical.
Yes.
So if you send us a question, I promise you the next podcast, we're going to start answering them all. But... mainly because Bobby's the brains of this whole operation. if we answered, it would be not good. But
ask Bobby.
He's having goulash.
The ratio of two stick coefficients.
That guy knows everything. Seriously, if you have any questions, you can always email him because he does know everything.
He does.
Well, anyhow, we're going to wrap this up. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening. And wow, I feel like I've left something out.
I don't think so.
We got the email.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to get that everywhere.
All right, well.
Oh, you know what? Next time we can talk about how the guys who wrote that song actually got screwed over by the record label. Didn't make all the money from Ferris Bueller.
Oh!
And on that note, for myself and all the guys, we'll catch you next time.
There.
That was like a freaking song the way that ended.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.